Hello. Welcome to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Thursday, December 18th, 2025. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. Normally, we begin the second hour by reading the obituaries, but today, there is no list. So, we will move on to the business section of the paper. The first article is entitled, FTC Expands Lawsuit Against Uber. This is by the Reuters News Group. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission said on December 15th that the agency and 21 states, along with the District of Columbia, have filed an amended complaint against the ride-hailing app Uber, alleging that it engaged in deceptive billing and cancellation practices. The updated lawsuit, filed in the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California, claims that Uber charged consumers for subscriptions without consent, failed to deliver promised benefits such as $0 delivery fees and monthly savings, and they made it difficult for users to cancel. Shares of Uber fell more than 3% following the news. The FTC first sued Uber in April over similar allegations. The amended complaint seeks civil penalties for alleged violations of the Restore Online Shoppers Confidence Act and state consumer protection laws. Uber One, marketed as a monthly or annual subscription, promises perks including $0 delivery fees and up to $25 in monthly savings. But the FTC said many consumers reported paying delivery fees despite the promise and not receiving the advertised savings. The complaint also alleges that Uber enrolled users in the subscription without their knowledge, including those who signed up for free trials and then charged them before the free trial ended. Uber denied the allegations and said it does not sign up or charge consumers without their consent. Cancellation was also described as exceedingly difficult, with users forced to navigate up to 23 screens and take as many as 32 actions in order to cancel, according to the filing. Uber, in an emailed statement, said, quote, "The majority of cancellations take 20 seconds or less and can be done in the app anytime. Prior to December 2024, as explained during sign-up, consumers, within 48 hours of their next billing period, had to contact support in order to cancel." That was the quote from Uber's in their emailed statement. Finally, states joining the FTC include California, New York, Texas, and Illinois. And that was FTC Expands Lawsuit Against Uber. Our next article is entitled Iconic Pizza Chain Secures Buyout Deal. This was written by Abigail Somerville from the Reuters News Group. An investor group led by Consortium Brand Partners is buying California Pizza Kitchen and has tapped the CEO of Convive Brands to run its restaurants. This according to the company telling Reuters on December 16th. 5 years after the chain's pandemic-driven bankruptcy. John Weber, Chief Executive Officer of Convive Brands, which is part of the investor group, will also become the CEO of California Pizza Kitchen's restaurant division. Michael Beecham, the current president of CPK, will lead the company's consumer packaged goods division. The news confirms Reuters' previous reporting that a deal had been reached to sell the iconic pizza chain after successfully bouncing back from its 2020 Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Billionaire Todd Boehly's investment firm, Eldridge Industries, which is the credit arm of the private equity firm Bain Capital, and Orify Brands are part of the investor group. The transaction, the terms of which were not disclosed, is set to close later this month. The restaurant, which was founded 40 years ago in Beverly Hills and has over 120 locations globally, generates an annual revenue of close to $1 billion. Reuters reported last month that CPayKey was nearing a deal with the investor group for under $300 million. The investment represents an opening foray into the restaurant category for Consortium Brand Partners. They own activewear brand Outdoor Voices, the home decor company Jonathan Adler, and the lifestyle brand Draper James that was founded by actress Reese Witherspoon. Lenders owned the restaurant chain following the July 2020 bankruptcy, which was triggered by a pandemic slowdown and a heavy debt load from its previous private equity owner. Eldridge Industries is a well-known investor across a variety of sectors, and its restaurant investment business, Convive Brands, owns La Paine Quotidienne and The Little Beat. Orify Brands, which is a New York City-based hospitality platform, owns Melt Shop and Feels Good Chicken, and it's a franchise partner for Five Guys as well as Wingstop. Bain Capital Credit is also participating in the deal, providing debt and equity financing. So the new owners plan to open more CPK restaurants in the United States and internationally using franchisee partners and sell more CPK branded products to grocery stores as part of its consumer packaged goods program, as well as continuing to innovate the restaurant menus. Corey Baker, who is the founder of Consortium Brand Partners, said, quote, CPK has extreme brand loyalty for something that's been around for so long, and there is an incredible amount of opportunity left, unquote. The chain has a fast-growing consumer packaged goods business. CPK has a partnership with Nestle to sell its frozen pizzas and with manufacturer Lighthouse to sell its salad dressings in over 10,000 grocery retailers globally. And elsewhere in pizza deals, investment firms have been circling Papa John's. That was the article, Iconic Pizza Chain Secures Buyout Deal. Our third article from the business section of the paper, Order Could Weaken Rights of Shareholders. This was written by Ross Kerber from Reuters News Group, but there's no byline location given. A new White House order aiming to rein in proxy advisory firms marks a major step in a broader Republican effort to weaken the role of investors and put more power in the hands of CEOs, according to government analysts and attorneys. President Donald Trump recently told the Securities and Exchange Commission and other agencies to increase oversight of proxy advisors, Institutional Shareholder Services, and Glass, Lewis & Company, which help mutual fund companies and other big institutional investors decide how to vote at corporate elections. Their clients hold significant positions in some of the biggest Fortune 500 companies in the world, making their advice influential. Trump's order said the proxy firms often use their power, quote, to advance and prioritize radical, politically motivated agendas, unquote, including supporting environmental and social issues at the expense of shareholder returns. The directive goes to the heart of a debate that has split U.S. and European shareholders. How much issues like climate change or workforce diversity should factor into investment decisions? Sarah Wilson, CEO of British proxy advisor Minerva Analytics, said, quote, this is about a lot more than fiduciary responsibility. This is geopolitical warfare through financial markets, unquote. She said Minerva's clients, which are largely based in the European Union and United Kingdom, want to keep their Russell 3000 holdings, but they worry that Trump's order and similar actions by the Republican-led states could interfere with their investment process. She said, quote, "Our clients aren't rabid socialists at the gates. They want good returns over time that are well risk-adjusted," unquote. Now, Trump's order, among other things, directs the SEC to consider, quote, "revising or rescinding all rules," unquote, related to shareholder proposals, worrying investor activists one of their key tools to pressure companies could be taken away. Shareholders often exercise their opinions by backing proxy measures, calling for things like limits on CEO pay or on voting for board directors, and it's seen as increasing accountability. If these agencies follow through with Trump's order, it could serve to reduce shareholder power by making it harder for investors to pressure companies through proxy campaigns. Sanford Lewis, an attorney who represents shareholder activists, said the order is based on the premise that issues like diversity or the environment don't relate to financial performance, even though many investors and proxy advisors do think that strong ESG policies improve a company's long-term value. Lewis said the White House is, quote, "trying to push their view onto investors," unquote. U.S. business trade groups, meanwhile, praised the order, saying that it would take politics out of business decisions and protect returns. Charles Crane, managing vice president of policy for the National Association of Manufacturers, said that Trump's planned efforts will guard against the firm's outsized influence and address issues including what he called investment advisors' over-reliance on these under-regulated entities. Michael Littenberg, an attorney for Ropes & Gray, said the order should be seen as part of a broader debate over how to balance robust markets and investor protections. He said, quote, "We are in the midst of what is likely to be a once-in-a-generation governance recalibration," unquote. A White House official, speaking on condition of anonymity, said the order is meant to strengthen investors' focus on maximizing returns. That official said, quote, "The only thing this executive order interferes with is the monopolistic practices of foreign-owned proxy advisors that seek to advance radical, politically motivated agendas," unquote. Now, Germany's Deutsche Börse brought most of the top proxy advisor institutional shareholder services in 2020. Glass Lewis is owned by Canadian private equity firm Peloton Capital and its chairman, Stephen Smith. Since taking office earlier this year, Trump and his appointees have moved to diminish shareholder influence on several fronts, including giving boards more control of annual meeting ballots and putting new filing requirements on big index fund managers BlackRock and Vanguard if they pressure management. Proxy advisors have been targets of top CEOs like Elon Musk and Jamie Dimon, and has drawn support from various Democratic officials and pension fund leaders. In the face of a broader backlash to their support for ESG investing, the firms have taken steps like supporting fewer environmental shareholder resolutions. Those shifts have spared them the ongoing scrutiny in Washington, even before Trump's order, and from Republican-led states, although both firms have had some legal success, like beating back a new Texas law that would have restricted their ability to offer ESG advice. So in that sense, Trump's order continues to pressure to diminish shareholder engagement, according to Dan Crowley, who is a partner at law firm K&L Gates in Washington. And that was the article, "Order Could Weaken Rights of Shareholders." Well, we're coming up on 15 minutes past the hour, and we've finished the business section articles. We have to move on over now to the sports section. Our first article is entitled, "Surprising Son." And there's a picture showing Suns guard Colin Gillespie in jersey number 12 celebrating with teammates after making the game-winning shot against the Timberwolves at the Mortgage Matchup Center on November 21st in Phoenix. The article, Surprising Sun, was written by Dwayne Rankin for the Arizona Republic. Phoenix Suns forward Dylan Brooks could not leave Target Center without messing with his villain junior. Colin Gillespie was just 20 minutes or so removed from scoring 11 of his 19 points in the fourth quarter of a 108-105 win over the Minnesota Timberwolves on a cold and snowy night, December 8th in Minneapolis. Gillespie is averaging a career-high 13 points and 4.8 assists in just 1.8 turnovers. Shooting 42.5% from three-point land, Gillespie has made his way into the starting lineup, with Jalen Green playing just two games due to a hamstring injury. He has been a difference maker for the Suns as they face the Golden State Warriors on December 18th at Mortgage Matchup Center. The Suns currently have a 14-12 record, and the Golden State Warriors have a 13-14 record. During a post-game interview that cold, snowy night in Minneapolis, the usually reserved, almost stoic Gillespie appeared to be the only one in the visiting locker room when he broke into sudden laughter in reaction to Brooks approaching him. Gillespie said as Brooks grabbed the collar of his long-sleeved, three-button, sand-colored polo shirt, he said, "Come on, bro, get out of here." The always flamboyantly dressed Brooks, leather jacket, dark shades, jewelry and all, told Gillespie to button up the top one on his shirt as he exited the locker room. Well, it seemed like just another day of teammates giving Gillespie a hard time. But don't think he's always on the wrong end of the teasing. Brooks said, "You would be surprised. He's got a lot of personality." Gillespie has displayed plenty of game, too, in what has been a breakout season for the 2022 undrafted guard out of Villanova. Houston Rockets coach Ime Udoka said, quote, "He's taken a nice jump. You saw little flashes here and there in Denver, but much more opportunity in Phoenix, and he's really taken advantage of it." His teammates sure have noticed. Suns guard Grayson Allen said, "He's found a good rhythm to what he does, how he gets his shots. This offseason, pickup games, practices, he's kind of doing the same stuff. It's cool to see because he's having a huge breakout year, but it's kind of the same stuff that we were seeing for a while." Well, the league has taken notice. T-Wolves all-star guard Anthony Edwards cited Gillespie when asked about their December 8th loss. Edwards said, "Number 12, he's pretty good at basketball." Well, first-year Suns head coach Jordan Ott saw it coming. He said, quote, "When I got the job, the positive momentum behind Colin was real. I could feel it from everyone." Anytime you have a guy that has won on so many different levels, he's just waiting for an opportunity. An incredible worker. High character. Goes about his business. He's not a rah-rah guy, unquote. Ott stressed the importance of creating off the bounce to Gillespie for his size at 6'1" to go along with his ability to shoot from three. Gillespie has taken heed and has become a viable offensive threat. He isn't flashy, but Gillespie plays fearlessly and has earned the confidence of his coaches and teammates. Suns star guard Devin Booker said, quote, I do it at that size, man. It's hard to do in the league, but that's a testament to his work. He puts the work in. He doesn't cheat any day. Super proud of him. I love being out there on the court with him." Unquote. Gillespie, who is 26, is on a one-year deal for $2.3 million. After that, he will be an unrestricted free agent. The Huntington Valley, Pennsylvania native wants to stay in Phoenix, But other teams are bound to make a financial run at him if he continues to play at a high level. Gillespie said, "There's a lot of time. I'm not even worried about that or focused on that right now. Just play the year out. Hopefully, have a really good year. Win a lot of games and then focus on it after the season. But I would like to be here long term." The max that Phoenix can offer Gillespie is a 4-year deal for $66.6 million with a starting offer of $14.9 million. It must be a minimum 2-year deal, and it cannot include an option in year two. Gillespie added and said, "I want to be here." Now, Gillespie isn't the quickest or the fastest or the strongest or the most gifted. Suns forward Royce O'Neal joked that Gillespie does not finish at the rim after Gillespie hit a 10-foot midi with 6.4 seconds left to stun the T-Wolves 114-113 last month at Mortgage Matchup Center. Smiling O'Neal said, "Shoots that pull-up? That's what he's good at." Gillespie doesn't have a long wingspan or tremendous athleticism, but he has been an impact player who has overcome injuries early in his career to help the Suns to a surprise start with a new-look roster. T-Wolves coach Chris Finch said, "He's a good player. It's kind of normal trajectory for a guy like him. He's been in the league now for 4 years, got a chance last year at the end of the season through a lot of upheaval, and he has made the most of it." Gillespie was one of Phoenix's positives to close a crash-and-burn 36-win season in 24-25. On a two-way deal in his first year in Phoenix, Gillespie reached double figures in 6 of his last 12 games, scoring a then-career-high 22 points to go with 10 assists and 5 rebounds in a 124-109 loss on March 29th at Minnesota. Former Suns teammate Kevin Durant said after that game, "Colin was great. Wish we could have got a win for him. That would have been wonderful." But it's a good stepping stone. It'll build more confidence. Gillespie has certainly built off last season in a big way. Averaging 17.6 points in an impressive 12-game stretch, Gillespie shot 46.7% from 3 and has established a new career high twice. Gillespie followed a 24-point effort on November 28th at Oklahoma City with 28 points on the road victory on December 1st against the Los Angeles Lakers with a 125-108. Brooks said, "He's not scared of the lights. I love how he is implemented in the starting lineup, keeping us composed, puts us in the right spots, and he's guarding the ball really well." Brooks said Gillespie wanted the Villain Jr. nickname. Gillespie went into that mode against the Lakers that night in Los Angeles, with Eddie Murphy and Floyd Mayweather sitting courtside, and Booker sidelined due to a groin injury. Gillespie was the star of stars in winning time. He scored 16 of his 28 points in the fourth quarter, shooting 4 of 6 from distance. As he repeatedly took life out of the Lakers fans with every dagger three-pointer, Gillespie started to uncharacteristically talk trash to the Suns bench in embracing the moment. Gillespie said, "I really don't like to do that stuff. I guess because I come from Villanova and Coach Wright would be pissed if we were doing that. I don't know. Just one of those things where you get into the game and you rattle off a couple of buckets in a row and now you're talking to your teammates." Gillespie is mostly mild-mannered, but as Brooks said, he will surprise you. Last month, Gillespie went on a mini-rant about the Suns' big man, Mark Williams, leaving his gear on the floor instead of putting it in a large laundry bin in the home locker room. Gillespie said this while pointing at Williams' socks. "Mark, put the camera right there. Pick up your stuff. Throw your trash away. Leave your locker better than you found it." You see, there's that personality. O'Neal, with Gillespie sitting within an earshot of him in Minneapolis, said, "Colin, he's one of a kind. At first, he never talked. Now, he talks a lot." Gillespie is also now a major part of the opposing team's scouting reports. Entering the defending NBA champions, Gillespie played huge against the Thunder in a game that was a little too close for OKC's comfort. So when Phoenix returned to Paycom Center for a rematch on December 10th in the NBA Cup quarterfinals, Oklahoma City was ready for the Suns and Gillespie. Facing more ball pressure from the NBA's top defensive team, Gillespie went scoreless in the first half of that 138-89 demolition, which was the worst loss in Suns franchise history. He scored just 2 points for the game on 1 of 5 shooting. He said, "Definitely learned from it, but it's basketball. Stuff like that happens. Every night is not your night. They are a good team. You've got to give them credit." But Ott saw it as an opportunity. "He's had such a great run," Ott said. "He's obviously moved up in the scouting report. That's good. That shows great growth from where he's been. The kid will respond. He will respond, and he will get better from this." The next game, Gillespie responded. He hit 2 threes in Phoenix's furious fourth quarter comeback that just fell short in that loss on December 14th to the Lakers by 116-114. Playing the entire fourth quarter, he finished the game with 10 points and 6 assists to just 1 turnover in 37 minutes. O'Neal said, quote, "You can see the work that he puts in every day. He brings a lot of energy. He's one of those guys you want on your team," unquote. And that was the article by Dwayne Rankin, "Surprise Sun." Our next article from the front page of the sports section was written by Nick Pecoro for the Arizona Republic. "D-backs showing interest in Bregman," B-R-E-G-M-A-N, Bregman. The Arizona Diamondbacks have shown interest in free agent third baseman Alex Bregman, a surprising development for a club that has been hyper-focused on adding pitchers, not position players, for the first few months of the offseason. While suggesting a potential Bregman-Diamondbacks deal is unlikely, a source indicated that the way such an agreement could come together would be if Diamondbacks owner Ken Kendrick, which is the club's managing general partner, opted to increase the team's spending power. Bregman, who is 31, has been one of the better third basemen in the majors since debuting back in 2016. He spent the first 9 years of his career with the Houston Astros, before signing with the Boston Red Sox prior to this season. He opted out of his Red Sox contract to become a free agent again last month. Bregman, who was born and raised in Albuquerque, grew up a fan of the Diamondbacks, whose television rights extend to New Mexico. As a kid, Bregman would attend Diamondbacks games as a fan when he was in Arizona for travel ball tournaments. Bregman had hoped the Diamondbacks would take him at number 1 overall in the 2015 draft. They instead took shortstop Dansby Swanson. Bregman was taken by the Astros with the next pick. It's unclear what a Bregman contract would cost, but various projections from the beginning of the offseason pegged it in the 5- or 6-year range at somewhere between $28 million and $32 million per season. It's also unclear what a Bregman deal would mean within the context of the Cattell-Mart trade talks. The Diamondbacks have been open to moving Mart in a package built around young starting pitching. Bregman is coming off a season in which he hit .273, .360, .462 with 28 doubles and 18 homers for the Red Sox. Players, coaches, and executives with the Red Sox gushed throughout the year about the impact that Bregman made on their clubhouse culture. The Diamondbacks' interest in Bregman was first reported by USA Today's Bob Nightingale. Right-hander Michael Soroka, whom the Diamondbacks signed to a 1-year, $7.5 million deal last week, was introduced on a video call by his new club, saying that he hoped the strides that he has made with his delivery and pitch mix and training regimen would help him to take a step forward and stay healthy with his new team. Soroka said, quote, "I'm really excited about where those sit moving forward. Obviously, the Diamondbacks see those as well, and I'm really thankful," unquote. Soroka finished last season with the Chicago Cubs and credited the Cubs executive Tyler Zumbrow with helping him build out his repertoire, which included improvement with his cutter, sweeper, and slider. Though Soroka has battled injuries throughout his career, he said he has learned a bit more about what caused those injuries in the past and what he needs to do to stay on the mound. Soroka said, quote, "Ultimately, that's where injuries have added up for me. It's just chronic inflammation and being able to clear that. I think what I was dealing with had a really big part in that. And working on the delivery, you change things and work on new ways to do things efficiently. I think all of that started to come into place, and that was kind of the last key," unquote. Moreover, Soroka, who is a Valley resident, was excited not just to be able to live in his home year-round, but also to pitch close to the training and pitching facilities that he frequents in the off-season. He said, "It's kind of a dream scenario." And that was the article, D-backs showing interest in Bregman. Our next article from the front page of the sports section is written by Greg Moore, who's a columnist for the Arizona Republic. It's entitled, "Dillingham Subtle as a Brick About Michigan." Kenning Dillingham doesn't want to go to Michigan, just like he didn't want to go to Penn State or Auburn or LSU. But the reality is, he might not have a choice. After practice on Tuesday, December 16th in Tempe, Dillingham said, quote, "Well, I mean, this profession is absolutely wild. It's just a wild profession. It's a wild industry. And right now, it's just nuts," unquote. Dillingham is a master at building culture, an expert at X's and O's, a recruiting rock star. But there is one area where he is sorely lacking: subtlety. He was as elegant as a brick through a window as he discussed the latest speculation that he might leave his office above Mountain America Stadium to break into the big house of Ann Arbor. Dillingham, as he spoke about how he navigates the volatility and the rumors and speculation in college football, said, quote, "I just think you have to treat people right. There's so much chaos right now. It's like the tech boom. There's money being poured into it from all these places, and it's a battle to grow the fastest. And some people, you could be up here today, and you could be at the bottom tomorrow." And then he snapped his fingers and said, "Overnight," unquote. As if that weren't a clear enough request for a raise for himself and for his staff and for his players and for his dog, probably, he went on and said, quote, "You've got to be able to protect yourself from that. Otherwise, just like the tech boom, a website you go to every day, you go to it the next day, and it's like that 401 error code. It's not even a website anymore. It got bought out, closed by the bigger company, right? Because they don't want the competition. That's kind of the world we're in a little bit right now. It's the tech boom of college football. You just got to be ready to change and hope you treat people right along the way," unquote. Well, geez, coach, tell us how you really feel. I reached out to the athletic director, Graham Rossini, and ASU president, Michael Crow, for comment on whether they were working on a contract extension and whether they're willing to pour in big money to play big boy football, but they didn't immediately return my messages. Let's hope they're going over the budget to find a few million dollars. Otherwise, we're going to be back to a half-empty stadium, a three-win team, and yet another coaching search. If you're getting emotional whiplash, it's only because you've been paying attention. Dillingham cried when he was hired. He said, "I was never leaving after the Auburn rumors." He cried when a reporter asked him how much the school meant to him. He said that he lives next door to his sister and that his parents are just a few houses down the street, and that his son and his niece are best friends. He's talked about growing up in Scottsdale, attending ASU, meeting his wife on campus. He has said that coaching this program was his dream job. And he knows that ASU gave him the keys when he is barely old enough to drive, taking a chance on him when few others would. Dillingham earns between $6 million and $8 million, which isn't too far off from the top tier of the Big Ten coaches. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. It would be a betrayal if Dillingham leaves. But I would understand. If Michigan has better facilities, a bigger budget for assistant coaches and players, and can bump him up to $10 million to match what Ryan Day makes at Ohio State, Dillingham might need to go just to see how good he can really be if all the obstacles are removed. ASU would betray Dillingham if they don't break out the checkbook, and quickly. If I'm Rossini and Crow, I'm making my offer before Big Blue can make their best and final. Dillingham wasn't subtle in letting everyone know what he wants, money. And he was very specific regarding how much he needs. He said, "I don't want to get into numbers, but a crap ton," unquote, for his assistants, his players, and his dog, probably. Quote, "I think my job is to try to do whatever I can for the people that are in the foxhole, the coaches that are in the foxhole with me. I've got to do whatever I can to fight for those people. I love it here. I've said that from day one. That's absolutely never changing. Absolutely never changing," unquote. And now, ASU has to show him some money, or love, or back. And that was Greg Moore's column entitled "Dillingham Subtle as a Brick About Michigan." The last article on the front page of the sports section is about girls volleyball. The Republic's All-Arizona Team and Coach Selected by Chris Coppola for the Arizona Republic. Here is the Republic's All-Arizona Girls High School Volleyball Team, along with honorable mentions and Coach of the Year for the fall 2025 season. The All-Arizona team members also represent nominees for our Player of the Year, which will be announced in late December, along with Players of the Year in other AIA fall sports. In the meantime, you can vote from our nominees for the individual that you think should be the Girls Volleyball Player of the Year. The poll will remain open until December 22nd at 5 p.m. Print readers can find the poll online with this story at azcentral.com/sports. Note, the poll reflects reader opinion only. The winner is selected by the Republic sports staff apart from the poll results. The Republic's 2025 All-Arizona Girls High School Volleyball Team. Ava Archibald, a senior at Desert Mountain. She was selected 5A Co-Offensive Player of the Year by the AIA, was third in kills in the 5A division with 447. Regan Burgle, sophomore, Sal Point Catholic. She was named the AIA's 4A Defensive Player of the Year. She helped lead the Lancers to the 4A championship. Hayden Connor, a senior at Corona del Sol, one of the top players in the state and a key part of the Aztecs' run to a second consecutive 6A final. The Washington commit was chosen as a 6A Offensive Player of the Year by the AIA. She led the 6A in kills with 452 and hitting with a 445%. Also was sixth in blocks. Then there's Kay Federico, a senior from Centennial. She was named the 5A Defensive Player of the Year by the AIA. She was second in digs in the conference and in the top 10 for aces. She helped lead the Coyotes to the 5A semifinals, where they fell to the eventual champion, Chaparral. Kristen Grantham, a senior from ALA Gilbert North, the AIA's 4A Offensive Player of the Year. She led the state in kills with 574. She was number one in assist in 4A, second statewide, with 1,095. And she was in the top 10 for hitting percentage in the 4A division. Vivian Hickman, a senior from Xavier, a big part of the Gators' second consecutive 6A championship team, Hickman earned Conference Player of the Year honors from the AIA. She was second in aces in the 6A division with 76 this season. Tessa Larkin, a junior at Xavier, another key part of the Gators championship team. She recorded 20 kills in the title match against Corona del Sol, and she was named a championship MVP. She was second in kills in the 6A division with 419 this season. She was named first team AIA in the 6A division. Kate Mobley, a senior from Sal Point Catholic, chosen the AIA's 4A division player of the year. She was a key part of the Lancers 4A championship team. She had a standout performance in the title match with 11 kills, 22 digs, and 5 solo blocks. She was named MVP of the championship. She finished the season in the top 5 for the 5A hitting percentage. And then we have Mattia Saunders, a senior from Xavier, another standout player on a talented Xavier team. Saunders was named the AIA 6A Division Defensive Player of the Year. She led the conference in digs with 598. That was second overall in the state. And she was seventh in aces in the 6A division with 61. Clara Schramm, a senior at Chaparral. She was named 5A Conference Player of the Year by the AIA. Schramm had a team-leading 15 kills in the Firebirds 5A championship victory, and she was named the MVP. She was second in Division 5A in kills with 455, and third in hitting with a 327 average this season. Sadie Whalen, a junior from Valley Christian. She was named a 3A Player of the Year after helping lead the Trojans to the conference title. She led the 3A division in hitting with a 566 percentage and in blocks with 159, and she was fourth in kills with 356. Next is Addison Wyman, a senior at Sunrise Mountain. She led the Mustangs to a 5A championship match where they fell to Chaparral. She was named AIA first team in the 5A division. She led the conference in kills with 515, and she was fourth in hitting with a 326 percentage. And finally, Molly Whalen, a senior from Canyon View. She was named AIA co-offensive player of the year in the 5A division. She was 10th in the conference in kills. And coach of the year. Lamar Rene Bryant, Xavier. Bryant was the Republic's Coach of the Year in 2024, and it was hard to overlook the season the team had again in 2025 under her leadership, finishing undefeated in AIA matches with a record of 35-2 overall, and they repeated as 6A champion, and they finished ranked number 4th in the nation by Max Preps. The Gators lost only 4 sets in the 27 AIA matches this season. That includes tournaments and playoffs, according to the AIA. And that was the article entitled, "The Republic's All-Arizona Team and Coach Selected." Well, we're coming up on 45 minutes past the hour, so we're going to move on over to the entertainment section. We're going to begin by reading today's horoscopes. We're going to begin with the sign of Aries. If your birth dates were March 21st to April 19th, this is for you. Say yes to something that makes you feel alive. Heart-focused endeavors feel soothing. For Taurus, birth dates from April 20th to May 20th, are you allowing yourself to be vulnerable? Raw emotions may poke at a pain point today. Tenderness is the medicine. For Geminis, birth dates from May 21st to June 21st. Partnerships and friendships are safe places for honesty. Is there mending that needs to be done with others? For Cancer, birth dates from June 22nd through July 22nd. Responsibilities competing for your need to restore? Well, Venus, aligning with Chiron, invites you to prioritize balance by relieving the pressure. For Leos, birth dates from July 23rd through August 22nd, play is medicine today. Let your inner child free. Joy brings up something more profound. For you fellow Virgos out there with birth dates from August 23rd through September 22nd, deep-seated irritations can be smoothed over today. Are there familial or emotional wounds that need bandaging up? For Libras, September 23rd through October 23rd birth dates, words are the remedy. Is there something you need to say to another? Get it off your chest. For Scorpios, October 24th through November 21st birth dates, are perfection issues riling you up? Confidence and ease take over when you accept that you are doing the best you can. For Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st, romance or passion projects may bring up a sore point today. Is what's really needed a deeper level of self-acceptance? For Capricorns, December 22nd through January 19th birth dates, hidden triggers buried in the subconscious may rise to the surface. How will you choose to integrate what irritates you? For Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th birth dates, is your mind on a negative loop? Call up a friend to talk it out. And finally, Pisces, February 19th to March 20th birth dates, praise may come your way. Accepting recognition is directly related to your self-worth. And that was today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren in her column, Dear Abby. The first letter goes like this. Dear Abby, my 58-year-old husband recently shared a bed in our camper with a 21-year-old family friend. The friend is female. Now, this happened in my absence. He thinks of her as a daughter, and although I'm not concerned about anything inappropriate happening between them, I still feel it was inappropriate. I expressed my feelings to him and said I didn't want it to happen again, but it did. He still thinks it's perfectly fine, but I do not. What are your thoughts? Signed, Inappropriate in the East. And Abby responds, Dear Inappropriate, my thought is that it's unusual and inappropriate for a 21-year-old woman to share a bed with your husband in the light of the fact that you objected. I can't help but wonder why no other sleeping arrangement was possible. What her parents, who I assume are friends, think about the arrangement. Perhaps it's time you had a chat with a young woman about this. You may find it enlightening. Our next letter goes, Dear Abby, a family member, a woman in her 60s, almost certainly has narcissistic personality disorder. She has caused problems in the family, so much so that some have quit their jobs, sold their homes, and moved out of town to get away from her dysfunction. This woman blames others, never apologizes for anything, and doesn't seem to think she has a problem. Having burned all of her bridges, she's now moving out of state. However, she still has ties to the family business. We want her to get the treatment she needs, and we want peace and order restored in our family. How do families in a similar situation accomplish this? Signed, Surviving in Kentucky. And Abby responds, Dear Surviving, I can tell you how some people in your situation manage. Recognizing that they cannot change the behavior of a disruptive family member, They seek family therapy to learn how to handle their contacts. How to handle their contacts with her. I hope it helps for you. And we have another letter. Dear Abby, I would love your thoughts on the protocol, if any, for mentioning the name of a decedent's very good friend or companion in an obituary. I have seen, on occasion, an obituary that lists all the family members, you know, wife, children, grandchildren, caregiver, etc., and then includes the name of a dear friend or companion who, in this instance, had been dating the decedent for 4 years, during which the two of them developed a very close relationship. Signed, Wondering in Illinois. And Abby responds, Dear Wondering, I don't think it is obligatory to mention all of the deceased relationships when an obituary is written. Often the family is grieving and distracted by the multitude of arrangements that must be made. If you are referring to yourself and you had a warm relationship with the family, I am sure your name was not omitted to deliberately ignore the caring relationship you shared with the deceased. Sometimes people want to have a say about what's included in their obituary. If your companion put in writing that your name should be included, then the family was wrong not to follow through. And those were the letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. Now let's turn to some comics. What do we see here? In the first comic strip, Blondie, drawn by Dean Young and John Marshall, Dagwood's at the office, in his chair, looking at the computer, typing away. Mr. Dithers comes in behind, carrying a sack, and he says, Here's your holiday bonus. Dagwood goes, Oh, wow. In the second frame, he sticks his hand in the bag and pulls out, and Mr. Dithers says, It's some lottery tickets I picked up at the gas station. And Dagwood says, Well, thank you. And in the last frame, Mr. Dithers is leaving and says, Don't mention it, but if any of them pan out. And Dagwood says, Oh, don't worry, boss. I'll be sure to mention it. And that was Blondie. And then in Zits, drawn by Jerry Scott and Jim Borgman, looks like Mom and Dad are dressed for a sports outing. Oh, yeah, do you want to come play pickleball with us? Mom asks Jeremy. And Jeremy says, You bet. And then as he starts to laugh, he said in the second frame, They say it's the number one sport for old people of all ages. And the last frame, he's being hit with a whole lot of pickleballs as he yells, Just joking! And that was Zitz. And in Beetle Bailey, drawn by Greg Bryan and Neil Walker, first frame, one of the privates is telling Beetle and Private Zero, he opens the door from the barracks, he says, I'm going out for a smoke. And the next frame, he's outside, sitting on the ground, leaning against the back of the building, and Beetle comes out and says, I thought you quit smoking. And he says, Well, I did, but I'm not giving up a good excuse for some alone time. And that was Beetle Bailey. And in Hagar the Horrible, which was drawn by Chris Brown, in the first frame, Hagar's son, Hamlet, says, Let's all play hide and seek. And Hagar slaps his hands together and says, Great idea, everyone. Hide and I will seek. And the next frame, Helga has overheard this. She walks to the pantry and she says, That's my cue to lock the pantry. And she's got a key in her hand. And that was Hagar the Horrible. In Peanuts, written by Charles Schulz, there's a little Sally, Charlie Brown's younger sister, standing in front of the class. This is my Christmas story, Santa and his rain gear. When Santa left the North Pole that evening, a gentle mist was falling. In his yellow slicker and big rubber boots, he set out on his annual journey. It was Christmas Eve, and soon children around the world would be hearing the sound of Santa and his rain gear. And that was R-A-I-N, gear, G-E-A-R. And that was Peanuts. And then in Baby Blues, drawn by Rick Kirkman and Jerry Scott, There is a spelling bee tomorrow at school. Oh, it looks like Zoe, the daughter, is putting on her jammies, and she's climbing into bed, and Mom's got her back. She's sitting on the floor with her back against the bed, and Mom says, "Well, that sounds nice." And then as Zoe climbs into her bed, she says, "Yeah, I can't wait." And as she pulls up the blanket up to her chin, her mom's getting ready to say goodnight, Zoe says, "Crushing opponents is my happy place." And that was Baby Blues. Well, before we go, we want to wish happy birthday to some celebrities who are celebrating their birthdays today. The guitarist and songwriter Keith Richards with the Rolling Stones, he turns 82 today. The director and screenwriter Steven Spielberg turns 79. The actor Brad Pitt turns 62 today. The actress Rachel Griffiths turns 57. Singer and rapper Cowboy Troy turns 55. And singer and songwriter Sia turns 50. And there's somebody else here. I just saw him. Oh, my cursor moved. There we go. Actress Katie Holmes turns 47, along with actor Josh Dallas, also turning 47. And the singer and songwriter and TV host Christina Aguilera, she turns 45 today. And actress Ashley Benson turns 36. And actress Bridget Mendler turns 33. And get a load of this, the singer, Billie Eilish, turns 24 today. Congratulations and happy birthday to all of these celebrities. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. You have been listening to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Thursday, December 18th, 2025. Have a great day. Bye.